At the Mahoney house, a uniformed nurse met Cecilia at the door.
Sir Mahoney is in the study, madam, but he is not really himself.
Cecilia thought of asking who he was instead. She had a lingering distaste for medical euphemisms, but resisted the temptation. She followed the nurse down the familiar wide passage to the double doors that led into Kevil's home office, steeling herself for what she would see. At the same time, she wondered where the security was. She had seen no guards at all.
If Kevil is a security risk, shouldn't there be more protection around him?
Sir George Mahoney is at the university. He won't be back until this evening.
No security, one nurse all day. Something wrong here.
In the study, Kevil lay awkwardly in one of the big leather chairs. His face looked strange, twisted. She realized that Regen had not been able to repair all the physical damage, that part of his jaw was missing, and the skin over it rumpled oddly. In his eyes, Cecilia saw no recognition, just anxiety. Then slowly, a spark, as if he were walking through a dark corridor with a candle closer and closer.
Cecilia?
Yes.
You look younger. Dye your hair?
Cecilia's heart sank. Of course she looked younger. She had rejuved several years before to a nominal 40. He had known that. They had slept together after that. It was hard to look at him, but she knew she must.
Rejuve, Kevil. I'm sorry I wasn't here when you were hurt.
Me, too. I can't remember all.
Cecilia wondered if the slurred voice was from the injury or from drugs. She glanced around, but saw no litter of pillboxes.
I've been to visit Ronnie and Raffaella.
To her delight, the spark in his eyes brightened.
How are they?
They're fine, except that the developer's done something foul with the colony they're on.
She told him about it, gauging his attention span by his expression. For a few minutes at a time, he seemed the old Kevil, his eyes bright, his face intent. Then he would blink, and the expression slacken. She stopped and waited, and when he seemed focused again, she went on.
You're really talking to me.
Yes, of course.
You understand.
Not completely, Kevil. But I know you need something to chew on.
Yes. They keep asking me questions, tests. Can't remember.
Cecilia remembered her own convalescence, the idiocy of the questions in the standard tests.
I hated those.
Name 3 vegetables. Name 5 fruits.
Name the CEO of Exet Environmental Group.
Sylvester Conseline. What was that?
A reasonable question, and one I wanted the answer to. Ronnie and Rafa are, as I said, practically marooned on Exet 24, and Brun said that's an Exet Group colony planet. I want to know who's responsible for shorting the colony of its startup supplies and staff.
Probably not Sylvester. He's been spending most of his time trying to convince the universe he's a great composer. But he does tend to sign anything anyone puts in front of him.
The nurse looked in, his expression exactly the one Cecilia least liked to see.
Sir Mahoney needs his rest, madam. Perhaps another time.
Go on, take a break. I'm experienced with this. I've been a convalescent myself.
But his lunch, his diet...
And I can cook. Go on now.
Finally he left, protesting and warning and muttering. Cecilia watched through the scan pickup until she had seen him go all the way down the street and board a tram.
Officious.
You think he's up to something?
Nurses are always up to something. But in addition to that, yes. Now,
Cecilia pulled the scrambler she carried out of her bag and turned it on. Kevil gave her a puzzled look.
Remnant of my times with Harris Serrano and those fleet refugees she foisted on me as crew. Oblo, whatever his name was. Good advice, I realized, after a while. Always carry a means of tapping someone else's data, and always protect your own conversations.
You always were smarter than people thought.
Yes, and so were you. Keville, what's happened? Why only one nurse? Why haven't you had a proper limb replacement?
No money.
But, Keville, you've always had money, pots of it.
No more. It isn't there.
But what happened?
I don't know. One day there, then it wasn't. George tried, couldn't find out.
Someone fiddled the databases? But people would notice.
Not unless it was their account. The people who normally handled my accounts would notice, unless they'd been transferred.
And that's not hard at all. And there are new ministers in the relevant ministries, and a huge muddle all over.
Yes. I think it happened when Bunny died.
If that were true, it would mean... No, could mean that it was related. That the same person or persons planned the attack on Bunny's life and Kevil's fortunes.
I know something. I know it's because I know something. Ceci, I can't remember what it is I'm supposed to know. I can't remember. I can't think.
A muscle in his face twitched. His hand shook.
Keville, relax, please. Let me fix you lunch. Yes, you come with me into the kitchen, and we'll talk some more. I know I can help. There.
It took a struggle to get Keville up, and Cecilia fought down her fury when she saw his unbalanced, lurching gait. But in the kitchen, he seemed more comfortable in the chair, his good arm propped on the wide wooden table, than he had in the study.
I'm assuming you don't have a cook because of the money.
Yes.
She fixed him fruit, bread, cheese. There were custards in the refrigerator, but she didn't trust them. Custards could conceal drugs. He ate, clumsily, with his left hand.
Keville, do you remember giving me your access codes?
Access codes?
The second night, after we decided it wouldn't work. You said, if I'm ever in the state you were in, I want to know you're on my side. And you gave them to me. You've forgotten, but I haven't.
Cecilia.
When George gets home, we'll get to work. Tonight. There's no time to waste.
I can't help much.
You did that years ago. We'll take care of it.
Somehow, Cecilia was turning into everyone's helpful old aunt again. Well, if she was going to take her turn being civic-minded, helpful, and useful, she might as well make a thorough job of it. She'd had another brilliant idea. Waltraud Meyerson, tenured professor of antique studies on loan to the Regular Space Service as a consultant on Texan history and culture, sat quietly in the corner of the room with her recorder on, watching the new Tex women argue about religion and education without getting involved. She hoped. This was the first conflict she'd seen among the women who had fled Our Texas, and she was fascinated. It had been months, and only now was the rigid rank structure breaking down. The first wives of the Rangers had each run her own household without interference from the other first wives. Primas, they were all called. Prima Bowie, the one Waltraud felt she knew best, actually ranked second in the hierarchy. The Ranger captain's first wife outranked her. That was Prima Travis, but she was older and had less vitality than Prima Bowie. Usually, she let Prima Bowie make decisions, but not today. They were arguing about schools again. Under Familius law, the children, all of them, were supposed to be in school. Parents could choose from a wide variety of schools, or school their children at home, and the requirements were, to an academic like Waltraud, minimal. All children must become literate in at least two languages, study some very basic science and mathematics, and the Code of Citizens. but these women had steadfastly resisted sending the children to school from the beginning. No one had been able to figure out why, because the women would not explain what they considered self-explanatory. Now, in the argument, Waltraud began to grasp the problem.
Boys and girls together? I think not. They become abominations.
There are single-sex schools. Most are religious.
Not our religion. They're heathens, or worse.
But you...
We should never come. I was wrong to come. We should go back.
Behind her, Waltraud saw several of the junior Travis wives nodding. But one pinched her mouth up and looked stubborn. Waltraud counted, third back. That was Tertia.
The men lied to us. They killed mothers.
You said. I never saw that picture you said you saw.
You heard Patience. Hazel, she's a good girl.
She's not a good girl. She's one of them. Prima Bowie, has your brains run out of your ears or what? She is one of them. An abomination. She runs around wearing men's pants, messing about with machines.
I'll bet she has an implant.
Prima Travis whirled and slapped Secunda Travis on the mouth.
Oh!
Don't you be saying those bad words, girl.
I just...
And don't you be arguing with me. You see what it comes to, Prima Bowie? We left our rightful place, and now we have this arguing and using bad language.
We can't go back. They'd kill us.
And so they should. Our children to grow up no proper way.
So you think we should go back, die, let our children be orphans?
No, but we got to find a right way to live, not halved up like bees with nowhere to gather honey.
Having delivered this, Prima Travis led her family out of the common room, back to their own little hive.
More stingers than honey.
Waltraud shut off the recorder and waited until the remaining women were seated back at their endless handwork.
Prima.
Call me Ruth Ann. I'm not a first wife anymore. Mitch is dead, and that boy won't actually marry me. I see that now.
Ruth Ann, fine. Listen, where do you think you would be happy?
The woman's broad, rounded face contracted in a scowl.
I won't be. Not in this kind of world.
There are many worlds in the Familias. What sort of place? Can you tell me? A city? A smaller town?
Hazel said there was, but how can we go there? We can't just up and ask some spaceship to take us, even if I knew. If I can't be home, I guess I'd like a quiet place. There's always noise here. Machine noise. I'd like it where it's quiet. Open. Maybe where I could see the fields. I always missed that. After Mitch moved us to the city, not having the fields outside. The garden just wasn't the same, big as it was. Someplace where people didn't laugh at me for not being schooled. Someplace where what I can do is worth something. But I doubt you got any place like that in your fancy confederation or whatever it is.
Oh, but we do, Ruth Ann. What you need first of all is to be on a planet, not on a station in space. And then you need the kind of world where the basic skills you have are desperately needed. Your gardening, weaving, sewing, cooking. And tell me, do your boys know anything of tools?
The older ones do. Boys make most of the furniture in a house. They're so rough on it, they have to learn to fix it and make it.
Your world had trees, didn't it? Wood for manufacture?
Yes, of course. Are there worlds without trees?
Nearly without, yes. Ruth Ann, the Familias has hundreds of populated worlds and is opening new ones to colonization all the time. And the colony worlds need pioneers. As you pointed out so succinctly, today most of us can't boil water without a computer. You know how to build fires. You know how to make bread from wheat. And I'll bet some of your older boys know how to make a mill.
Of course they do.
Waltraud could almost feel the slow smile working its way out of the woman's confused heart. And just as she expected, it finally smoothed out the ridged brow.
You really believe we could get to such a place? How? We have no money?
I know someone who does, and they owe you a lot. The only problem is making the connection. But that's what scholars do.
Make connections?
Yes, it's our job, though most people don't think it is. They think of us in terms of collecting information. Silly, anyone can do that. What we do is notice which bits make new connections.
You will help us? Why? You think we're ignorant?
Of history, yes. Of life, no. And of course I'll help you. Any decent person helps others. It's one of the things people are for.
What religion are you?
Waltraud picked up her bag.
You wouldn't recognize it, and it would only bother you. Prima, Ruthann, I'm going to be gone for several weeks. I've been asked to escort a diplomat from the Lone Star Confederation back to Castle Rock. But let me just show you.
She took out some hard copy ads for Colony Worlds.
See this? You might like something.
But what would our protector say? He'd have to say it was all right.
Waltraud thought of the scuttlebutt she'd heard about young Baron Serrano and his problems with the women.
I think he'd be delighted if you found a place you could be happy.
And live in the right way. Happiness isn't everything. Just because our men did wrong things doesn't mean they was wrong about everything. I want my children to grow up to be good, God-fearing men and women.
I'm sure there's a place, Ruthann. When I get back, I'll help.
Baron saw Esme just a moment before she saw him. Saw her face with that harder edge, that warier expression. Then their eyes met, and she grinned as they settled at an empty table in the concourse.
How long do you have?
4 hours. It was supposed to be 48 hours on station minimum, but all of a sudden...
Same with us. I should have been here 3 days ago, but the blasted ship had a pressure lock problem, and we hung around for hours and hours at SecSev HQ. Then they transferred us to Old Bofin without time to send any message, and then she couldn't generate more than 72% of her normal power, and we just came limping in. I was afraid you'd have left already.
So was I. I left a message for you with the mail drop already, just in case.
Baron put his head to one side and grinned.
Surely all this scramble can't be just to keep us apart. That's an expensive abuse of fleet resources.
Whatever it is, it's a nuisance. Is your family still against us?
Yes. They think we should wait until the new Tex women are all taken care of. How am I supposed to do that? It could be years. What about you?
Esme handed over the message that had finally arrived, tied and stamped formally.
The landholders are upset. Can you read Kerlik's script? Basically, it says that it is unacceptable for a land bride to marry off-world at all, particularly to marry a foreign military officer.
But we're not foreign.
I know that. You know that. But Altiplano?
I don't want to take away anything you have. You've explained about being land bride. It's a wonderful thing.
It's a nuisance. I never expected to be land bride, and I thought I'd lost you, and... Anyway, I accepted it in a time of crisis, but that's past. My father realized very early that I might resign in favor of a legitimate heir. It's not done often.
It had never been done except in cases of insanity or other permanent disability or extreme old age. Esme didn't like to think of marriage as equivalent to insanity or permanent disability.
But... there is a ritual procedure. The hard part is going to be getting leave to go there. I can appoint a stand-in, but that's not the same thing as the next land bride. My father says if I marry you, even though I've appointed someone, the Landmen's Guild could challenge and intervene in our family affairs, and that would be bad.
I can see that. And we still haven't figured a way around the fleet regulations. Even if you do resign as land bride, you can't quit being a sector commander's daughter. Does it seem to you that this is a lot harder than we thought it would be?
Yes. If it were this hard for everyone, nobody would get married.
They stared gloomily at each other for several minutes. Then Esme sat up.
Let's not waste it. We have 4 hours. Or rather, 3 hours and 42 minutes.
I don't suppose we could get married in 3 hours and 42 minutes. Maybe an hour to get married and 2 hours to enjoy it?
It takes a lot longer. We couldn't possibly. But we can do something cheerier than sitting here eating bad food in a noisy place.
Right, but you'll have to pay. I'm flat broke.
Hmm. J.C. Chandler, president of the Lone Star Confederation, had just finished watching the news cube. This was trouble with a big T, and he didn't know how he was going to deal with it. They had had problems enough with the Familius Regnant over the years without this kind of nonsense. Millicent raised her eyebrows.
Looks bad, J.C.
Raimi leaned back with his hands folded over his belly.
Well, there's always crazes in the world. Not our fault they call themselves Texans.
Two obvious responses, and neither of them are useful right now.
J.C. put his hands on the table. Time to talk seriously.
That new administration has closed the border to Lone Star citizens. They say they can't guarantee our safety, and they did send this to explain why. And they haven't withdrawn their embassy staff.
But it wasn't us. Those idiots are all the way across familiar space.
And more like the length of it, if you look at the actual geometry.
What matters is that they've done it. Closed the border. Frozen our assets in their banks, too.
Raimi sat up so suddenly that his chair rolled back.
Well, they can't do that. The Treaty of Poldek clearly states...
They've done it.
J.C. tried not to enjoy interrupting Raimi again, but it was hard. The older man was so annoyingly difficult to get a rise out of, and here he'd actually made Raimi sit up.
But I moved most of the family's liquid capital into Goodrich and Scanlon only a year ago. It's not reasonable.
They claim we might be financing our countrymen, as they call them, even if we aren't personally involved. They want to be sure what our money's doing.
Making more money just like theirs. What do they take us for, ignorant rubes?
Well, probably, but that's not an issue right now. What I want to do is tell the Cabinet and Congress that we're sending some investigators to help them out.
Help them? Help them what? Steal us blind?
No, help them with specifically Texan issues. They seem to be blundering around not knowing the difference between those idiots and the rest of us. We could help.
They've got a scholar, they said. That Meyerson woman.
Millie, why do you call her that Meyerson woman? That won't help our image.
I liked Professor Lemon. He used to send me the nicest notes. All right, it's not fair, you're right. We should help them, even Meyerson, if they let us.
From sheer force of habit and a fondness for tradition when it didn't get in the way, the Lone Star Confederation had retained the term Rangers for its internal security forces. This hadn't bothered anyone, not even the Familius Regnant with their hoity-toity attitudes, in centuries. But obviously, the Familius Regnant had a reason to react badly to the title now. The abuse of the same word by the new Texas God-fearing militia nuts made real Rangers wish they'd trademarked the name somewhere back down in history. Still, it wasn't the fault of the Lone Star Confederation. Rangers had the right training to pursue an investigation, and they weren't about to change their names just to satisfy a twitchy Familius Regnant. They'd send a Ranger. Which Ranger then became the issue. But not for long, because Catherine Ann Brierly was the obvious best choice. A woman like Katie Ann, and they'd know that Lone Star's Rangers weren't like those others in any way, shape, or form. Especially shape. And besides, it would get Katie Ann out of everyone's hair for a few months. She had been getting a mite big for her britches, though not in a physical way, ever since her Uncle Beau got appointed to the Supreme Court. She'd taken to being even more Texan than the Texans could stand. Ranger Catherine Ann Brierly arrived at the Familius Regnant Embassy wearing a red two-piece suit that emphasized every asset she had except brains, which, in Kate's view, couldn't be put on view anyway without making someone puke. A tumble of ash-blonde hair swirled over her shoulders. Her bright blue eyes twinkled at the RSS Marine guards by the gate. Neither twinkled back. She held out her ID case.
Hi, I'm Kate Brierly, and y'all are expecting me.
The gate opened behind the motionless guards, and she was facing a squad of them. The leader, or whatever, came out and took her ID case, then looked from the image inside to her.
Your Ranger Catherine Ann Brierly?
Yep, but that's an official picture in uniform, and I didn't see any reason to get all gussied up in uniform just for a friendly visit. I figured y'all have an ID scan unit anyway.
Quite so. If you'd come this way.
She followed the young man toward a portable booth set up in the courtyard, ignoring the squad falling in behind her. This was going to be fun. She was who she said she was, retinals, fingerprints, voice prints, the whole shebang. And in another 10 minutes, she was upstairs waiting to meet the ambassador.
Sarah, Ranger Brierly.
Oh, just call me Kate.
Kate widened her smile. He blinked.
It's irregular.
I know, but who's to tell on you? Not me.
I have received permission for 2 rangers to enter Familia's space and help with inquiries.
You don't need to. I'll just go by myself, thanks.
But...
Oh, it'll be simpler. Less cost to you, too, keeping track of just one. Besides, it's traditional.
Kate had seen the ambassador before, while running security at the Cattlemen's Association ball 3 years before, but she'd been in uniform then, her hair slicked back into a neat French braid. He didn't remember her, she could tell that. All the better.
Now, I realize y'all are concerned that we might have some connection to those new tech nuts.
Concern was expressed. Not by me. I've tried to reassure the Grand Council that you all, Yeah, the Lone Star Confederation are not part of that group.
Oh, heck no. I'd like to see anyone making us wear clothes like that. And bare feet? Shoot. I was as tomboy as they come, but you don't see me shuffling around in bare feet.
Kate pointed a long, elegant foot clad in a feminine version of the Texas style. High-heeled, but not a boot.
It's the new government. We have a new speaker and a new Minister of Foreign Affairs and Minister of Defense. One doesn't like to say it's an experience, but they're just not listening to me. You've traveled in familiar space before, Sarah. Ranger?
Kate. No, not me. I've been to Blue Bonnet and West and Panhandle, but not to Familius. It'll be fun.
At the border, Kate found she had an escort at the end of the docking tube. A trim young man with a face like carved bronze.
Lieutenant Junior Grade Serrano. Ranger Brierly, your luggage will be transferred.
Oh, call me Kate.
Kate smiled broadly at him. He didn't smile back.
You're to come aboard Jer Falcon. It's the fastest route to Rockhouse Major, where the task force is reassembled.
Kate glanced around the docking lobby, decorated in what struck her as bland and chilly colors, muted blues and greens, and noted 2 men and 1 woman in RSS uniform lurking by the entrance.
Are you arresting me?
No, ma'am. Just transporting you, ma'am.
Kate cocked her head and considered him. In her experience, young men his age melted with only 1 smile, and he hadn't.
Well, his preferences might lie elsewhere, but still...
Fine. Let's go!
He turned as quickly as she moved and walked beside her through the entrance, where the others lined up after them, and then guided her across the wide passage to what the sign said was a drop chute. Kate stopped short.
Oh, I'm not going in there. I've heard about those.
You don't have them?
No, we like floors in our elevators. No one's looking up my skirt.
Fine. Then we'll take the cross-station tram.
He led her to the station, plugged some kind of data wand into a port, and the next tram stopped, doors opening exactly opposite them. Kate was impressed and said so. He still wasn't melting. She looked him over again. He couldn't be a mango. She had known lots of mangoes, and they had a certain feel. So either he really hated Texans, or he was resisting her because he had a girl. Her first meal in the officer's mess gave her a chance to do more than mutter polite greetings. The ship's executive officer gave her the first opening.
Have you ever visited Familia's space before, Ranger Brierly?
Kate was not sure what an executive officer did, but she had memorized the insignia and knew he was a lieutenant commander.
No, and I hope I'm going to see more of it than the inside of a transfer station in this ship.
What would you like to see?
Oh, all those sights the tourist brochures have. Langston Ice Falls, Chuzalera's Cloud Forests, the Grand Council Chamber on Castle Rock. I'd like to have seen your king while you still had one.
Why?
It's so romantic. All those drama cubes sit in Misty Violonia or, oh, what's that place where they go running around on horses chasing after a fox? We just have ordinary people doing ordinary things.
Kate didn't really believe that, but wanted to see their reaction.
The story cubes you people export are extraordinary enough. Those longhorns.
Longhorns. And the stories are old. Last century's revival of Wild Wild West.
Annie, that woman in fringes with all those guns?
Stories, not real history. And that's what I'm here for, to talk about real history.
But you're a ranger.
No doubt about it. They were twitchy about that word. With reason, though the reason was a lie.
I am a ranger. They weren't. They were a bunch of maniacs with no legitimate connection whatsoever to real rangers.
So you say.
Kate leaned forward and looked down the table.
So I say, are you calling me a liar?
The air seemed to congeal around her. She smiled. The silence lengthened.
Mr. Chesub, that was rude. Apologize.
I'm sorry, Ranger Briarly. I'm not accusing you of lying.
Kate let her smile soften.
We have had just as many freaks and nutcases as any other culture. But the people who stole your chair's daughter are not ours. The Lone Star Confederation wouldn't tolerate that kind of behavior. Lone Star women wouldn't tolerate that kind of behavior. Not that we're, however you say it, hostile to men or anything.
Well, you don't look like the pictures of their women. But you're all from Texas originally, right?
Not really. The Lone Star Confederation was organized for space exploration back on Earth. And most of its members then were North Americans, many of them from the exact region then known as Texas. But most of the people in Texas came from somewhere else, all over North America. Sure, there were some hard-shell Texans among them, people whose families had been in Texas just about forever. But a lot of them weren't. And Lone Star has always welcomed immigrants who share our philosophy.
Which is?
Fear God and nobody else. Ride tall, shoot straight, never tell a lie, dance with who brung you, and never renege on a handshake.
Another silence, this one slightly shocked, but responsive.
Dance with who brung you?
Another way of saying honor your earlier obligations. Don't just look at current profit.
Interesting.
And your philosophy?
For a long moment, no one answered.
If I understand yours, it's much the same. Tell the truth, keep promises, stand by friends, don't turn your back on an enemy.
I noticed you didn't mention God. Is that because those New Tex nutcases have you scared, or what? Any of you folks got any religion?
The Familia's legal code, and those of the regular space service, allow freedom of belief and freedom of religious practices, which are not directly harmful to others. Because of the wide variety of beliefs, many held strongly, we do not generally discuss religion with those we do not know.
Kate cocked her head and gave him her best mischievous kid grin.
In other words, it's bad manners to talk about God.
Something like that.
You people must have been descended from Anglicans. Well, I'm not here to make you nervous, though I don't see why a good argument about God should do anything but keep your digestion going. It's one of our favorite forms of entertainment.
You, are religious yourself?
You betcha. So as far as I know, every member of my family back to old Earth has been, and I'm not about to break tradition.
And what, since you don't mind our asking, is your religion?
Baptist. But my mother's family was about half Anglican, and my dad's grandmother was Methodist. There's even the odd Presbyterian in there somewheres.
Glances passed back and forth.
Y'all don't have a clue what I'm talking about, do ya?
Not exactly.
You do have Christians, right?
Certainly. Many kinds, though I don't know all the names.
Then just call me a Christian, and don't worry about it. God'll sort it all out.
Do you have any dietary or special needs we should know about?
No, that's somebody else. I'll eat anything I like the flavor of any day of the week. We don't drink alcohol on the Baptist side of our family, except when we're being young and sowing wild oats. Every once in a while, I sow a wild oat myself.
Kate sensed the mood warming even more.
What do your kind of rangers do?
Anything that needs doing. We're a lot like a police force, but we tend to work alone. Keep order, track down the bad guys, and help the people who need it.
How do you know who the bad guys are?
Same way as you do, I expect. Liars, cheats, killers. The kind of people who'd pour gasoline on a dog.
Kate felt the total non-comprehension of that one, and stopped.
You have dogs, don't you?
Oh, like dogs? Hounds or something?
Dogs, like hounds. Sheepdogs, cow dogs, even those awful nippy-ippy poodly things. And you do have mean people who hurt animals?
Yeah.
Well, we don't much like people who mistreat animals, kids, or old ladies. Or old men, for that matter. They're on my list of bad guys.
By the end of that meal, she sensed that most of the officers were at least neutral, if not actually friendly. The next day, Kate met the antique historian, Professor Meyerson, and sighed to herself. So predictable, that type. The lady academic, tweedy and warty. Not that Meyerson actually had warts, but she looked as if they should be there to complete the official look. Even on Bluebonnet, known for its beautiful women, a certain kind of academic woman looked like this, only with better tweeds. At least Meyerson knew more about the Lone Star Confederation than the rest of the people she met, and she was finally able to clear up a question that bedeviled Kate for days.
That young fellow, Baron Serrano?
Meyerson, head down in a scanner, as usual, didn't seem to be paying close attention.
Yes?
What do you know about him?
Meyerson's head came up, and her expression was mingled mischief and surprise.
He's giving you trouble.
No, just the opposite. He's ignoring me as if I had bark like a mesquite tree, but I just can't believe he's a mango.
He's not. He's engaged to another officer in the first place, and in the second place, he's burdened with all those new techs, women and children.
Why him in particular?
They consider him their protector, and for them, this means he's the only one who can make decisions about them. The regular space service has taken his pay to help support them, so he can't marry until he figures out what to do with them.
I suppose shipping them back isn't an option?
No, they'd kill them. At least mute them. He's stuck with them.
That's too bad. He's a nice boy, and if he's minded to marry, he should have the chance. You suppose those women would listen to me?
Meyerson looked her up and down.
As a messenger of the devil, maybe. They're very serious about their religion.
And I am very serious about mine, Wally.
They had come to first names several days before, and Kate refused to struggle with Waltroud after the first few tries.
You don't have to go barefoot and wear rags to be a believer. You ought to send those women to us. We'll make real Texans out of them. They had to have some gumption to get up and leave in the first place.
Day by day, the officers relaxed around Kate, and if she hadn't had the appetite of a healthy horse, she'd have starved for all the talking at the table. She talked more than she asked questions, and the information flowed her way without her having to ask. By the time they reached Rockhouse Major, she had most of them eating out of her hand, men and women, and had invited most of them to come visit sometime. She thought a few of them actually would. All but the young lieutenant junior grade, who had remained coolly distant no matter what.
Well, if he wants to sulk, let him.
She had many, many other fish to fry, and others had told their own tales of Baron Serrano and Esme Sweeza. So he was in love with a hero. If the stories were true, Sweeza would have made a good ranger, and perhaps worried about whether she'd stick it out. Security concerns kept her from touring Rockhouse Major, though she could tell it was much bigger than any of the orbital stations in the Lone Star Confederation. A fleet shuttle took her downside, and she got her first look at Castle Rock.
Boring.
The government buildings, mostly gray stone, looked substantial and dull. Insides matched the outsides. The Foreign Office was all dark paneling and dark tiles and thick dark green or blue carpeting in the offices she was led to. Everyone wore dark suits, men and women both, and had a dark, muffled, hurried way of speaking.
Sarah Briley, so pleased.
That was the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the first person she'd seen in this dismal building who looked completely awake. He wore a different style of shirt, with a tiny ruffle at the collar, and he had several blue and silver rings in his ear. She knew what that would mean in San Antone, but not here.
You are so, so decorative, my dear.
This she had met before, twinkling of the eyes and all. She put out her hand.
Mr. Minister, I'm Ranger Briley, but you can call me Kate.
But I thought your rangers were sort of policemen.
That's right.
Kate saw some of the man's staff wincing and grinned at them, too. The way they acted, you'd think this solid stone building would fall over if anyone spoke louder than a murmur.
But surely you're not. I mean, you're more of a honorary type. title.
That was going too far.
Mr. Minister, I am a ranger. Same as any other ranger. I qualified on the same course, and I can and will demonstrate my skills anytime you or anyone else questions them.
She had no weapon, of course, but she could break this fellow's neck, or any other bone, without one.
Oh, certainly, certainly. Now, we are having a reception in your honor this afternoon, in the palace. I hope you aren't too tired.
Kate was never too tired to party.
Not at all.
The palace was another pile of gray stone, with outcrops on one side of a curious buff color. Inside, the formal rooms had the same sort of dull, dark look as those in the minister's offices. Kate was on her best behavior, smiling like a car dealer. She had been through her share of fancy events and knew that her role as honored guest was to smile and tell everyone how beautiful things were. She told the new speaker what an honor it was to meet him and thought what piggy eyes he had. She told his wife what a lovely dress she had on, even though she longed to tell the woman that she would never in this world wear that shade of green. It made her look sick. She told the foreign minister, whose name was Pater Origiemos, that she liked his ruffly shirt, though she contemplated mentioning that a ruffled shirt plus those pretty rings in the ears would have branded him an obvious mango in the Lone Star Confederation. Then she overheard part of a conversation and learned that the local slang for the same thing was pet. It was all intensely boring, since she didn't know enough yet to make sense of most that she heard. Her feet hurt, and her head was beginning to throb. Then Pater bustled up to her, leading a tall blonde woman, whose face Kate recognized from her briefings.
And this is Ranger Briley, Bronmiga Thornbuckle.
Kate looked at the blonde woman who had been a prisoner so long, whose father was dead, whose predicament had led directly to her own presence here, and saw a familiar shadow in those blue eyes.
Hi there. I hope you can forgive my having that kind of title.
Well, you don't look much like they're rangers.
Hun, they aren't rangers. They're trash. Lowering a groundhog's butt. A brick and call itself a diamond? But that don't make it one.
The woman grinned, her face suddenly relaxing.
And you're the genuine diamond?
Pure carbon crystal, that's me. Cubic, but not zirconium.
Excuse me?
Oh, sorry, slang's hard to translate. Listen up, my feet hurt. Can we go sit down somewheres?
If Kate could make friends with this woman, and she liked her already, maybe she could get the embargo lifted faster than anyone had thought. Even Kate, at her most optimistic, hadn't thought she'd get to meet the cause of it all, or that the woman would want to meet her. But that was obvious from the satisfaction on her face. She'd come here with a purpose, and Kate was part of it.
The reception's nearly over, Sarah. Ranger, the car will be here soon to take you back to your hotel.
Why don't you come with me, Brun? We could have dinner.
Thanks. I'd like that.
Pater scowled at that.
Did he think he was going to move in on me by himself? Bad chance.
They ate in Kate's suite, which was as dull as everything else she'd seen so far. She didn't see the good of silk on the walls if it was gray. Kate looked up at Brun halfway through a main course of some nondescript meat with a lot of fancy vegetables heaped over it. They hadn't even had steak on the menu.
You people don't much like bright colors, do you?
Brun looked around.
This isn't very bright, is it? I'm used to it, I guess. Castle Rock is pretty conservative.
That's what you call it? That foreign office is like a funeral home. Only color in it is your minister, and he's...
Oh, he's awful. Such a little climber.
Climber?
Oh, yes. Minor family, so he pushes and climbs, tries to make himself bigger. Well, he got a ministry, though who knows what he did for Hobart to get it.
Hobart's your speaker?
Right. But Pater wants more. Oh, you wouldn't believe. He's after my mother.
Lord Thornbuckle's widow. Your mother?
Yes. He had the nerve to tell me when Mother'd left for Cerealis that he could now offer so much to a lonely widow. Oh, I nearly threw him out the window.
Ugh. I wondered if maybe he was, what is it? I mean, with all those rings and that shirt.
No. The rings are rejuvenant rings. They're actually the medical codes. They can be implanted or worn, but a lot of people like to wear them.
How many times has he been pickled?
I don't know. I didn't count. Several. Why do you call it pickled?
Kate held up one of the wrinkled green things she hoped was a pickled cucumber.
Preserved, you know? Lasts nearly forever.
Brunn ate silently a few minutes.
What do you make of our speaker?
Kate looked at her, mind on full alert.
You're asking a visitor to criticize your government?
He's a Consuline, and we're in the Barraclough Sept.
Is that families or religion?
Maybe both. Let's just say that the Consulines and the Barraclough have been rivals for a long time, in sort of a genteel sort of way. I don't like Hobart, but I wondered if maybe an outsider would see him more clearly.
He's nobody I'd buy a ranch from. Not without walking over every inch of it and checking the title since God made it. He's got a mean mouth, and his wife's scared of him.
You saw that?
Oh, heck yes! Just like I saw that you didn't like Pater with the rings and ruffles holding your hand when he led you over. But you wanted to talk to me.
You don't miss much, do you?
That's my job, ma'am. Now, why don't you get down to what you really wanted to talk about so we can enjoy dessert later and not have to tippy-toe?
Kate pushed her plate away and leaned back, fixing Brunn with the look that had brought confessions out of the Harkness boys. Brunn pushed her own plate back.
Oh, I hate it when everyone is smarter than I am.
They aren't, when you leave your brain on. It didn't take a lot of intelligence to recognize that you wanted to meet me as much as I was glad to meet you.
You haven't met Esme. She's smarter.
Kate ran her hands through her hair, fluffing it out.
Oh, spare me. I've heard plenty about Miss Genius on the trip over here. Everyone says she's so wonderful. And I'll bet she is, but she isn't you.
No.
Lord, girl, you sound like you haven't got a friend in the world. Didn't you ever have a best friend?
Yes. No, but she got married.
Oh, brother. You and me both. Sally and I were closer than twins. And then she went goopy all over Carl, and that was the end of it. Two babies. She says she's still my friend, but all she wants to do is tell me about those two rugrats, which one put jam in the processor, and how the other one is smarter than any 10 college professor, blah, blah. My mother told me she'll come out of it in a few years, but in the meantime, I have to pretend to care what some grubby little kid is doing.
And you don't?
No. If there's supposed to be some instinctive maternal drive, I missed out at the feed trough. What about you?
Oh, me neither. Oh, I don't want to hurt them, but...
You didn't want to care for them either. Makes sense to me. Now, where are your boys?
A friend of my mother's took them. Found a home for them. But I worry.
Don't. I mean, don't worry more than you have to. And you're evading the subject. You didn't just accept a dinner invitation because you thought a stranger might be lonesome. You just about committed the impossibility of telepathic communication. Want me to figure out a way we could talk?
Or to get away from Pater. He's been wanting Mother's answerable call number. All right, all right. I'll tell you. I want to find out who killed my father and what kind of hold Hobart Consuline has on my Uncle Hollis, who's after my father's estate.
Now that's smart. That's a goal we can work on.
We?
Of course we. Hell's bells, sweetheart. I'm not going to leave you to hunt this hog alone. And I need you to help me find my way through this maze of protocol y'all live with. Besides, if you come out convinced that I'm not a monster, maybe you'll help me get your government to lit up on Lone Star Confederation funds. You did know our citizens can't access their money in your banks, didn't you?
No. When did that happen?
Right after the assassination. And all our citizens expelled and the borders closed. Even your father realized we had nothing to do with that bunch of idiots who captured you. This embargo thing has put a real crimp in our economy. The Familius is our biggest external trading partner.
I didn't know. It didn't come up in the council meeting. A lot of things seem to be happening without coming up before the council.
Kate glanced around the room. She had made it as secure as possible, but she didn't trust any public space.
Maybe we ought to talk about this another time. Tell you the truth, I'm feeling the journey.
She noticed that Brun's gaze slid around the room, too, as if she were also aware of these surveillance possibilities.
Of course. Listen, I know some of you Lone Star people ride...
Ride, hun? I started riding before I could sit up. In fact, before I was born. Don't tell me they have horses in this city.
They do, but what I had in mind was our place out in the country. It's only a small stable, but we have some lovely views.
Why, that's right nice of you. I don't know how busy I'll be here. I'm supposed to spend my time convincing your government that we're harmless.
I'll introduce you to people, and it won't be all boring afternoon receptions like today's.
It wasn't that bad, under the circumstances.
Within a week, Kate had moved to Appledale. Brunn took her to dinner with Victor Barraclough and hosted a garden party where she met a group of less senior Barraclough relatives. The Lone Star woman seemed unfailingly cheerful, brisk, and friendly. She persisted in wearing screamingly bright colors and spent a long time every morning arranging her hair into its vast poof. But aside from that, she might have been an old friend. Brunn found herself explaining, over breakfast or in the intervals of their social commitments, everything she knew about the family business and her uncle's machinations. The next time Harless visited, Brunn saw the ranger in action for the first time. Kate waved off the maid and went to the door herself. Brunn paused to see what would happen, stepping back so that she couldn't be seen from the door.
Hi, I'm Kate Brierly.
I want to see Brunn.
Oh, well, that may be, but I don't know who you are.
Brunn was fairly sure that wasn't true. She'd shown Kate ID pictures.
Harless Thornbuckle. Now go call Broom for me.
Now, Mr. Thornbuckle.
That's Lord Thornbuckle.
Back where I come from, it's not considered polite at all for a gentleman to push his way past a lady.
You're no lady, and you hurt me.
Be that as it may, you pushed at me, and that just won't do. Now you be nice and just wait there a minute, and I'll see if Brunn has time to see you.
She better, or I'll...
No threats. Y'all know Brunn's still under formal guard for any threat to her safety. You'd hate to be hauled off kicking and hollering to spend the night in jail.
Brunn came down another few steps to see Kate standing with her back to the door, shaking with silent laughter.
You shut the door on Uncle Harless.
Oh, I truly hope your father was a better man than that, Brunn, because that man is all hat and no cattle where brains are concerned.
Oh, a lot better, but I'd better talk to him.
Brunn reached for the door and Kate stopped her.
No, go into the drawing room and sit down in something comfortable.
Brunn complied, realizing halfway there what Kate was about.
You can come in now. Brunn's in the drawing room.
Harless stormed into the drawing room.
Where is your mother?
Brunn carefully thought of the possibilities. Her mother might be in bed, or eating, or out riding, rather than the certainty that her mother was somewhere on Cerealis.
I'm not sure.
Damn it. She has no right to take family property while the will's in question.
What property, Uncle Harless?
Cerealis. I'll wager that's where she is.
It's a large universe, Mr. Thornbuckle. Why do you think she's there? And what difference would it make if she was? She can't take off with the whole planet.
Harless glared at Kate, his face reddening.
Well, she better not remove anything from the property. I have an injunction.
Brunn felt cold to the marrow.
An injunction? Not to dispose of property? In other words, not a dismissal of the original will?
Not that it's any of your business, no. She's enjoined from disposing of any of the property under dispute until the case has been decided.
Suppose you just let me see that, Mr. Thornbuckle.
Kate reached out an imperious hand. To Brunn's surprise, her uncle put a hard copy into it. Kate looked it over, one penciled eyebrow elevated.
It may be legal here, but it sure wouldn't be legal back home. Y'all have a really strange legal system, with no proper constitution. But I guess you'll have to send Lady Thornbuckle a message about it.
You don't scare me.
Harless lurched out of the chair, grabbing the hard copy from Kate on his way to the door.
I don't think much of your security, letting that man up to the door without warning us.
He's my uncle.
And you never have family murders here? No, never mind. It's time I went to work.
The Serrano Legacy, Change of Command, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1999, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. performed by Nanette Savard, Sonny Lasky, Colleen Delaney, Ren Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Sherry Simpson, Terrence Aselford, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Mort Shelby, Jeff Baker, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, Peter Stray, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael John Casey, Casey Platt, Tom Simpson, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Tess Rowan, Corey James, and James Konacek. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Additional original music by Dan Smith, Johann Detweiler, and Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed The Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Bonsoir.
Good evening.
Monsieur Valois, I am Jacques Lambert. I have been following your research online for months. I have a keen interest in the sword.
Theo?
The sword is not for sale.
I wager you'll hand over the sword for a kidney.
Monsieur Valois, is it you?
Oui, it is real, Anya. The sword has been found.
D'Artagnan's sword.
Are you going to check to see if it is in there?
It's a rolled parchment.
The map to the real treasure.
I'm guessing this map is the labyrinthine aqueducts beneath the city.
Come along, Anya. La vie souterrain.
What an appropriately macabre place for the queen to leave a treasure. Asher, did you hear that? What do you think it was?
Probably just rats.
I don't think so.
You know, I do not like you, Lambert.
Give me the map,
Theo.
Call off your goons, Lambert.
He is expendable.
Kill him!
No!
Anya, leave me. I'm dying.
Hang in there, Asher. You can do this.
I've been expecting you.
Then I'll get you, Lambert. All this is for what?
I've got my eye on a new treasure. It is another sword. A magical one.
You believe in magic?
I know, Anya. I know.
You know nothing.
I will have the sword. Touché.
Rogue Angel 15. Swordsman's Legacy. From Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.